Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. It is December 11th, 2017. We're here on a Monday to recap a couple of games from Week 14. Talk about our award ballots as the award season closes up here at the end of the NFL season. And joining me to do all that is Doug Kide of NESN. Doug, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm great, except for the fact that maybe the most exciting player in the NFL this year just tore his ACL last night, which, granted, the NFL didn't need any more injuries. Not like we're exactly lacking for star players who are missing this season, but adding another one to the pile is pretty depressing. And so the injury to Carson Wentz late in the Eagles-Rams game yesterday, a really exciting game outside of the injury, just seems to cast yet another pallor over a really frustrating NFL season.
Yeah, absolutely. Really put a damper on that game and kind of an afternoon worth of entertaining games. Not only that one, Seahawks-Jaguars was pretty entertaining. The Sunday night game was pretty entertaining. And we got a bunch of snow. We got a blizzard game in Buffalo. That was fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, just another injury to add to so many other this season. And so many of the most fun players to watch as well, with Sean Watson. Obviously, we're talking about Carson Wentz here, but even, you know, on the team that I cover on a day-to-day basis, Julian Edelman and Dante Hightower, two very fun players to watch, and both of those guys are out for the season. So really a lot of those guys. Odell Beckham, you can go through the list.
Yeah, absolutely. J.J. Watt comes to mind as well. Just guys who really cross the league at all positions seem to be missing. And so it looked like we're going to get Aaron Rodgers back this week, and that's going to be obviously a plus for exciting football. But losing Carson Wentz was a real bummer. I haven't really seen much criticism of what happened on the play, and I don't think there should be in terms of him scrambling. Of course, the play didn't count, ended up being called back for a penalty. He scrambled into the end zone for, I think, what would have been a touchdown, but it was called back. And you know, you can't blame Carson Wentz for what happened. I mean, it's not as if he took an unnecessary hit, realistically, on the play. I mean, he was scrambling, and he did what any quarterback would do in that situation, I think, towards the end zone. It's still unclear whether the injury happened on impact or on the step before impact, but and thinking about Carson Wentz as a player, I mean, the concern here seems to be, like, you know, he's been so mobile this year. He's such an athletic quarterback. He's someone who, both as a runner on sneaks, as a as someone who, you know, controls the ball on the read option, he really does threaten teams. And then also, I think, as a mobile quarterback, someone who escapes sacks, who make plays on the run. I mean, he's been such a huge part of his game. And so I do think he's going to be fine. And it's just that ACL, as opposed to a serious more serious multi-ligament injury. But I guess, Do you think these sort of injuries are likely to impact Carson Wentz over the remainder of his career, or is this just kind of a misstep onto what is likely to be a very successful career for Carson Wentz?
I still think it will be a very successful career for Carson Wentz, but you can't help but think, you know, one way or the other, this could affect his mobility. Obviously, players come back from torn ACLs all the time and are just as mobile as they were before they suffered them. But will he be a little bit hesitant to run with the ball quite as frequently now that he's suffered the torn ACL? I think that's a question to kind of ponder here. And, you know, this might just be a recent bias on this, but it does seem as though these injuries do happen more often to mobile quarterbacks. Obviously, that's not only the case, since Tom Brady tore his ACL, Phillip Rivers tore his ACL, but you do seem to put yourself at a little bit more of a risk for this kind of injury when you are out there running around like Carson Wentz was doing and like Deshaun Watson was doing and like RG3 was doing. And, you know, in the past, we did see that change RG3's game. I'm not going to say the same thing is going to happen to Carson Wentz because they are much different players. But, you know, there is that concern about it changing someone's game or at least making them hesitant to be the total player that they were beforehand.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, you know, in terms of thinking about guys who really never get hurt or who have one injury perhaps in their long careers. Eli Manning, not a mobile quarterback. Peyton Manning had the neck injury but didn't have any other injuries and obviously was not a particularly mobile quarterback. Tom Brady, of course, the one ACL tear in the pocket, but not someone who was especially mobile. And then one other guy, Rivers, I mean, where he did suffer the ACL tear, but it was in the playoffs, and he obviously is not much of a mobile quarterback even before that injury, and certainly afterwards he's been about as immobile as a quarterback can be in the NFL and remain effective. So Unfortunately, there's not much we can do. I mean, it's been confirmed he's out for the year. You can't go back and change time. The Eagles can't keep Chase Daniel. They can't go out and, you know, trade for Sam Bradford, even though I think that would make a lot of sense for both teams if Bradford was healthy. You can't do much besides go to Nick Foles at this point. And so he didn't play especially well yesterday. He had one big completion to Nelson Aguilar, but averaged just over 4 yards per attempt. Obviously, he's not going to be the same player, but is what we've seen from Jared Goff this year in escaping Jeff Fisher, in what we've seen from Case Keenum escaping Jeff Fisher, is it fair to wonder if Nick Foles is going to look better than he did as a starter in St. Louis because he doesn't have Jeff Fisher as his head coach anymore?
I would say 100%. I feel like Jeff Fisher was almost the theme of that game, almost the theme of this entire week because of all these guys who have played better once they escape him. You know, obviously Jared Goff, and Nick Foles is not going to be Carson Wentz, like you said, but you could certainly do worse than having Nick Foles as your backup quarterback. And clearly he had a lot of success under Chip Kelly with the Eagles, but I don't think you can really bank on that. And as you wrote today, you can't really look at his season under Jeff Fisher as well and say that that's what he's going to be. He's probably going to be somewhere in between, and that's not nearly as good as Carson Wentz. But I think that the Eagles can, I guess tread water is not the right word, but they can continue to be successful without a top-tier quarterback. And I don't think that Nick Foles will be – I can't see him being too bad. I don't know if he's going to be Case Keenum, but I think that he will be able to at least carry that team to the number one seed. And then, you know, once they're in the playoffs, who really knows what's going to happen because it all really depends on what other teams are out there. But and the fact that the Vikings have been able to do so well with their backup quarterback – you know, I think it gives the Eagles some hope there.
Doesn't that seem weird to say that it's like, well, we don't know if he can be as good as Case Keenum's been? 2017's a strange season.
Yeah, both 2012 quarterbacks, by the way. That was quite a class there in 2012.
Oh, wow. That didn't even occur to me.
Yeah, that was the year that I covered the Senior Bowl, so I have kind of intimate knowledge about that draft class and those quarterbacks, and it was a pretty hilarious class of quarterbacks at that Senior Bowl because it was Russell Wilson, it was Nick Foles, it was Kirk Cousins, and then you've got the Brandon Whedons, Kellen Moores, and Ryan Lindley's in that group as well. So a little bit of mixed success rate on those quarterbacks, but definitely an interesting quarterback class overall.
Yeah. Brandon Whedon, of course, going before Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins, and Nick Foles, which doesn't look especially great in hindsight, but here we are in 2017. it does seem like, you know, if you think about, like, the Jags, for example, I think Blake Bortles is playing the best football of his career right now, but it's hardly as if that's a team where, you know, they're getting great play out of their quarterback. They're getting pretty decent play out of their quarterback, and they have a great defense, and they can run the football. And you look at what the Eagles can do. I mean, they're third or fourth in defensive DVOA heading into this game. They're a very solid defense. They have run the football very well. Once they brought Jay Ajayi on board, really they struggled in the first few weeks of the year, but since then they've been very effective running the football. And sure, you figure Wentz not being there is going to hurt them. Not going to be quite as effective running the football, but they can do those things. I mean, they can be a team where, you know, it wouldn't be hard to imagine them being successful even without Wentz at quarterback.
100%, and I was extremely impressed with Jay Ajayi in that game. I thought that he looked fantastic. Todd Gurley was the best running back in that game, but Jay Ajayi was pulling some fancy moves out there. I guess one question I have for you is, was it concerning at all to you to see the Rams offense, I guess he didn't gash the Eagles defense, but Todd Gurley had a lot of success out there, and the Rams obviously were able to put up a lot of points on the Eagles. Was that concerning to you at all about the Eagles defense?
I mean, a little bit. You know, I do think that the Rams offense had a very decent day. The final score, I think, maybe is a little aggressive because, of course, they did block that punt for a touchdown, which crazy. You still get the 28 points, but the Eagles also dropped a really obvious interception. Nigel Bradham, I think, was the one who dropped it on an attempted screen pass, which, you know, I mean, you're not going to drop those interceptions every week. I thought Cooper Kupp had more success than I would have expected. You saw a little bit of Jalen Mills in the slot there, which I don't think is a great matchup for the Eagles. And then I do think that this is overall going to be a very solid defense, though. Todd Gurley makes a lot of teams look bad and has production against just about everybody. So I think I'm looking at the overall performance. I think this was not their best game, but I do think overall they have been very solid. And I thought their front four was great. And On the flip side here, I mean, I do think that the Rams have reason to be concerned about their own injury issues, especially on the offensive line, where Andrew Whitworth had a high ankle sprain, kept coming back in and out, and they lost Rob Havenstein, the right tackle, during the game, which led to that big play at the end where Chris Long forced a strip sack of Jared Goff, which ended up really winning the Eagles the game. Around backup right tackle, I think it was Darrell Williams who was the right tackle. So, you know, I do think they can dominate games with their front four. And for the Rams, I mean, if they have their offensive line healthy, it's possible they win this game. But we saw the injuries pop up, and that really ended up costing them, I think, when they needed to hold up most.
Yeah, definitely. And I was obviously impressed with the Eagles' defense. They're down the stretch to limit the Rams and to cause the strip sack and to do all those things. And obviously the injuries on the Rams' side did help in that regard, but the Eagles defense was able to stand up when the game mattered most. And, you know, sometimes you aren't going to be able to blank a team. Sometimes you're going to give up 20 plus points. And that's obviously what happened in this one, but to still be able to hold the opposing team when it matters most, I think does obviously show the complete upside of that defensive unit, which has been so good this season. And yeah, I mean, obviously there are concerns on the Rams side with injuries, but I still can't help, despite the fact that the Rams lost this game, I can't really help but come out of the game feeling a little bit better about the Rams than I do about the Eagles just because of the Carson Wentz injury. The fact that the Rams were able to keep up with the Eagles in that game and lose such a close game, I'm feeling kind of good about the Rams right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think that's unfair. I don't think they, you know, I think they had a pretty good testament to themselves in terms of how they performed with maybe, you know, if they don't get that strip sack at the very end, they may end up winning this game with a defensive stop against Nick Foles. It's hardly out of the question. The injuries, like you said, are going to be a concern, not only on the offensive line, but Kayvon Webster, starting cornerback, ruptured his Achilles in this game, and he's done for the year. Jermaine Johnson left with a concussion, so they've been pretty healthy overall. Had some injuries here or there, Robert Woods as the obvious example, but relatively healthy team this year, and so losing those guys are going to really test the depth of what's honestly a pretty top-heavy roster. And speaking of depth, we mentioned Chris Long. I mean, how much do the Patriots miss Chris Long, given how productive he's been in a small sample as a rotation defensive end for the Eagles?
They definitely miss him, especially right now, because they're heading into this Monday night game with a bunch of guys who weren't on the roster as of September as their starting pass rushers right now, because Trey Flowers is hurt, Kyle Van Noy is hurt, Derek Rivers is on injured reserve, Dante Hightower, Shane McClellan, those guys are on injured reserve. So I think in retrospect, it probably would have made sense for the Patriots to try to bring back Chris Long in a role that suited him a little bit better. I know that one of the reasons why he didn't want to come back to the Patriots was the role that they were using him in last year as kind of that five-technique defensive end. But, you know, with all the injuries the Patriots' defense has faced this season, I think that he probably would have slid into more of either a seven-tech or a rotational defensive end role this season for the Patriots. So, especially at this time of the year, yes, they definitely miss Chris Long and the type of plays that he can make they showed yesterday.
So you figure the Patriots aren't going to be too heartbroken about not having their defensive depth against the Dolphins this week as we record this on Monday afternoon, but game where you might figure they would miss Chris Long and maybe want to have as many pieces up front as possible is next week when they play the Steelers, who last night launched for the second season in a row a very furious comeback late in a game to come away with a victory over their arch-rival Ravens in a game that I think it's fair to say I don't think many people saw this one turning out the way it did, which 39-38 in terms of the scoring, 72 points. Sorry, not 77 points. Excuse me, I don't know how to do math. 77 points. Really an exciting game, but one that did feel like it was. It felt like the Ravens should have won this game, huh?
Oh yeah, 100%. Especially what the Ravens were up 9 points with like a little over 2 minutes left in the game, something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was just a pretty demoralizing loss for the Ravens for this to happen again this season. Steelers were able to do this last season against them. And, I mean, if the Ravens didn't have such a cakewalk heading down the stretch as their schedule goes, this could be the type of game that would, you know, kind of tank a team. But I think that they will still be able to win out this season. They probably still will wind up being a playoff team. But at the same time, I mean, this game showed a ton of flaws there for the Ravens that is not a very top-heavy roster. I feel as though this Ravens team just overall kind of lacks that top end talent. That I don't know. That's just kind of, I guess, how I felt watching that game yesterday.
I agree with that.
Yeah, there's not a lot of standout players on that roster, I guess. I mean, Alex Collins had a good game, but I mean, he's a guy who was, the Seahawks thought so lowly of him that they cut him after spending a fifth round pick on him. And, you know, they have a talented defense, especially their defensive line, but I don't know, just overall not super impressed with them. And I was impressed with the Steelers' ability to come back in that game. Not so impressed with their defense allowing, you know, the Ravens to kind of be able to go off in that game.
Yeah, is it more impressive or perhaps more unlikely to see Ben Roethlisberger throw for, what, 505 yards? Was it 505? Was it 507? Yeah, 506 yards, or Joe Flacco to throw for 269 yards? Which one is more unlikely to you in any given week?
I'm going with the latter. I think that Joe Flacco throwing for 269 yards is less likely because, obviously, at least Ben Roethlisberger has Antonio Brown at his disposal. But, I mean, Joe Flacco has been so underwhelming this season that the fact that he was kind of able to carve up that Steelers defense a little bit, you know, relatively speaking, was surprising to me because the Steelers defense has been good this season, obviously.
Yeah, I feel like it was injuries on both fronts that seemed to really impact the game here. With the Ravens, or with the Steelers, I should start with, of course, they lost Ryan Shazier last week to a serious injury. They brought in Sean Spence off the street, who'd been cut by the Colts, and Sean Spence was, you know, he tried, gave his best, but this is a guy who's been a street free agent for most of the year. He knows the Steelers scheme, but just isn't going to make the same plays, and we saw on a number of those long Alex Collins runs that he was either missing tackles or maybe heading to the wrong spot. I mean, it just isn't the same player as Ryan Shazier, who's a viable defensive player of the year candidate when healthy. On the flip side, the Ravens, of course, lost Jimmy Smith to a Achilles injury that's going to cost him the rest of his season last week, and we saw what happened on Sunday night, where it was either Brandon Carr or Marlon Humphrey. But no matter who they had, and the Ravens have clearly invested a lot of cornerback in the hopes of stopping Antonio Brown, they just, whatever they did not work. Antonio Brown destroyed them. I mean, he single-handedly maybe won that game for the Steelers. 11 catches on 18 targets for 213 yards. Just an enormous performance from the league's best wide receiver.
Yeah, they had absolutely no answer whatsoever for Antonio Brown in that game, who, I mean, another viable MVP candidate perhaps this season, given how good he's been for that team. And the Ravens really, as I said, just had absolutely no answer there whatsoever. It seemed like there was just big play after big play after big play in that game from the Steelers, from the Ravens, from both sides. And, yeah, I mean, I think that on the Steelers' defense, that Ryan Shazier injury, you know, as devastating as it is, as tragic as it is, it also obviously really had a pretty profound impact on the Steelers' defense, seeing those long runs by Alex Collins and just seeing how that defense played altogether without, you know, perhaps their best defensive player there on the field.
I have a question for you, and I don't know the answer to this. I feel like I've asked it before, maybe not to you, but is Jesse James good?
Ooh, is Jesse James good? No, I don't think so. I think good is a strong word. I don't know. What is your take on this?
I don't know. I honestly have no idea, because there are weeks where I'm like, oh, this dude is just an anonymous football player. And then this week, 10 catches on 12 targets for 97 yards. And I mean, not like they were meaningless catches. He had that really important series of catches when the Steelers were backed up on their own 8-yard line with 2nd and 19. Just before the 2-minute warning, he had a catch for 6 yards, set up 3rd and 13, caught a pass up the seam for 16 yards to convert 3rd and 13, then another 6-yard catch to get the Steelers continuing on that drive, really got them out of a hole. Now, of course, Ben Roethlisberger obviously played a big part in that, but it played a huge role helping them convert there. So I'm inclined to think that he's just a guy, but he has a lot of games.
That's what I kind of feel like too, yeah. And, I mean, I guess when Ben Roethlisberger is throwing for 500 yards, someone kind of has to catch those passes. I mean, obviously, you could say the other way, that Ben Roethlisberger doesn't throw for 500 yards if Jesse James isn't catching 96 yards. But I don't know. I mean, there's just so many weeks where he does just look like a guy that I kind of just feel like this is a blip. I don't think this is the norm for Jesse James moving forward or in the past.
Are you more impressed with the Steelers after this game or less impressed? Or are you the same? Like, is this the same as a valid answer?
the same is a valid answer. I might be less impressed just based on their defensive performance.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, like I said, I mean, there's obviously a reason for that, and it kind of feels almost crass to be talking about the Patriots and the Steelers' defense when Ryan Chazier did suffer such a devastating injury, but it did have an impact, and I just was expecting them to be better in that game. I was expecting them to shut down Joe Flacco. I was expecting the Steelers to win that game pretty handily, and it didn't happen. So obviously they have had close games all season, so I shouldn't have been that surprised by that, but I was just utterly unimpressed with the Ravens coming into this game, and there was many times in that game where I thought, wow, the Steelers are actually going to lose this game.
Mm-hmm.
And in the grand scheme of things, it didn't totally matter if they lost this game or not, because next week's game against the Patriots still would have meant the exact same thing. It still would have been the battle for that number one seed. But I don't know. It was just way closer than I imagined it would be. Obviously, the offense is extremely high-powered when Ben Roethlisberger can throw for 500 yards, mm-hmm. and Antonio Brown can get 200 yards. When, I mean, there were times in that game where it didn't even really seem like he was open, and he's a 5'10 receiver who's making contested catches, and that he's just unbelievable, obviously. But no, I would probably lean towards less impressed with the Steelers.
Yeah, I mean, look at their schedule this year, and look at their wins and losses. They have a lot of narrow victories and even some losses against some bad teams. I mean, they beat the Browns by 3 points in the opener, and that included a block punt for a touchdown, lost to the Bears in overtime. They've beaten the Chiefs. They've beat the Ravens here, which is beat the Ravens twice, more impressively in the first game in Baltimore. But, I mean, a three-point win over the Colts in the last 3 weeks, now a three-point win over the Packers, three-point win over the Bengals where they had to come back and win, now a one-point win over the Ravens. So they're not really blowing out that, you know, they're not blowing out mediocre competition. So that's going to be an interesting thing to see for them over the rest of the season. I mean, obviously they have the Texans and Browns after the Patriots, so if they beat the Patriots, they're in great shape to go 14-2, but maybe not quite as impressive as their record suggests heading into that Patriots game.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess there's something to be, or maybe they just played out into their competition, because obviously it's been a winning formula for them, but you do have to wonder when they are going up against a team like the Patriots, who has the potential to really break out and get out to a big lead and not surrender that lead with the defense that they've had lately. You do really wonder if this formula is going to work when the Steelers do start playing better teams. And I guess we will find that out next week. But yeah, I can't imagine them winning this game next week if they're going to play the same way that they did against the Ravens last night.
I guess, but I just don't know what they're going to be from week to week. Like, it feels like they are capable of doing just about anything they want on a week-to-week basis, which includes looking like the best team in football and looking like an average team. And that even changes from quarter to quarter or half to half. I mean, they're so hard to really gauge at this point. But we'll see. I mean, obviously a really talented team and someone who on their day looks like they could be the best team in football. Just their day seems to be very difficult to gauge in advance. We're going to hit a break. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that, I mean, obviously the Chazier injury does have a big impact, too. So it's certainly possible that we do see a different team moving forward as well. I mean, maybe this is more what to expect from the Steelers moving mm-hmm. forward. And I guess we'll just have to see, because we are only really working on a one-game sample size here. They were able to come back and beat the Bengals without him last week. But mm-hmm. I don't know. It's an injury that has a major impact on that defense. And it's just going to be curious to see how they do look next week against the Patriots again without him.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Patriots try and attack the Ravens without Shazier. If they try and run the ball a little more than they might have if Shazier had been in the lineup, if they try and really exploit those linebackers, given that they're going to be without Shazier, who would have been their best cover linebacker, their rangiest linebacker for sure. There's going to be definitely some interesting ways to attack the Steelers that might not have been the case with Shazier in the fold. As I hinted at a minute ago, we're going to go to a break. We're going to come back and talk about our award ballots with a few weeks to go here on the Bill Barnwell Show in a moment. But first, one of the biggest games of the season in the NFL is coming up this week. Patriots at Steelers. And unless you are a Steelers season ticket holder, unless you are someone who perhaps plans on sneaking his or her way into the stadium, you probably don't have tickets to the biggest NFL game of the season. Well, good news for you. There is a way you can get in, and that is using our partners here at the Bill Barnwell Show, SeatGeek. And of course, you know SeatGeek does the best job of aggregating tickets that are available from all over the web and using their deal score technology. you know you're getting a good deal for even the most valuable and expensive game of the year. Plenty of tickets available on SeatGeek right now for Patriots, Steelers, and all kinds of games in Week 15 of the NFL season. And even better, you can use the SeatGeek app on your phone with just a few taps to get tickets to a game instantly. You don't have to wait a day or two to see what happens. Use your phone. By the time you are finished with your sandwich, you can have tickets to the biggest NFL game of the year. And you can get $20 off your first purchase of tickets to anything on SeatGeek by using our promo code, which is my last name, Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. If you use promo code Barnwell, you will get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So whether it's Steelers and Patriots, whether it's, oh, I don't know, the Bills, the Browns, the Colts, the Niners, no matter who you want to see, you can get $20 off your first purchase on SeatGeek by using my promo code Barnwell today. All right, welcome back here to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. I'm joined by NESN's Doug Kide. Just recapped a couple of games from Week 14, and now many of the players in those games could be in the running for a possible award after the end of the year. So I'm writing about them. I wrote about the quarter season awards and the half season awards here on the podcast. Going to get to, I guess, what would qualify as the three quarter season awards with you. Want to hear what you think about several of the major award opportunities in the NFL. I feel like some of them are pretty settled, and then some of the others are just wildly wide open, and I have no idea who the best possible candidate is. But let's start with one of the ones I feel like are probably pretty settled at this point, which is Coach of the Year.
See, I'm not sure if this one is settled because I feel as though there's so many candidates for this award just based on how many teams were bad last year and suddenly are good this year. I mean, you're looking at, I guess, Anthony Lynn in that group. You're looking at Doug Marrone in that group. You're looking at Doug Peterson in that group, Sean McVay. I guess Mike Zimmer could be included in that. Even Sean Payton and Ron Rivera could be included in that group. And then I guess one other one is just Bill Belichick could be included in that group based on the injuries that I talked about earlier with Julian Edelman and Dante Hightower. They've suffered a ton of injuries both on offense and on defense. And here they are sitting with two losses. And I just find it kind of curious that Bill Belichick has only won three AP Coach of the Year awards in the past, which ties him with Chuck Knox, which just doesn't feel totally right as far as where Bill Belichick and Chuck Knox both stand in the all-time coaching ranks. I'm still going to say Doug Marrone, just based on the fact that that team went, 3-13 last year, and now they are really looking at one of the best teams in the AFC. So I'm going with Doug Marrone on this one, but I do feel as though there's kind of a lot of close candidates. What's your pick here?
It's tough. I mean, I do empathize with the idea that Belichick is underrated and deserves more credit for what he's done as a head coach. We're clearly spoiled by him, you know, when it comes to some extent that we're not, he's not a huge favorite every year, but that's not really how they grant this award. It's usually not who did the best job of coaching. It's usually who improve their team's record by the most from year to year, who did the best single season job in terms of making their team look better. And I think given that, maybe we have a train barring in on the show here, given the range of possibilities from teams who have been improving dramatically, I think you're looking at Doug Marrone, you're looking at possibly Sean Payton, given what he's done with the Saints, especially on the defensive side of the ball, which may deserve no credit for it, maybe Dennis Allen, but I do think he's going to be in the discussion. But I do think the sexy pick is Sean McVay, and I do think that if the Rams win next week against the Seahawks and end up winning the NFC West, I do really think he's going to be the consensus candidate. I mean, and I can't fault them. I don't know that he's necessarily like the guaranteed lock, like deserves to be the Coach of the Year candidate, but I don't think anyone can really fault him, right? Like no one can say Sean McVay is a bad choice necessarily.
No, I certainly not. And that does seem like definitely the sexy pick there, Sean McVay, first year head coach, everything. And Doug Marrone, I would say, isn't quite as beloved as Sean McVay for good reason or not. But I mean, I do feel as though they kind of, did similar things this season in bringing a team out of the tank and putting him in the playoffs. So I don't think there's really a wrong choice there. And I would even, I couldn't fault them for putting any of the other coaches I listed who went from having losing records to now perhaps being in the playoffs. It is curious, though, like you said, that this coach, that this award has almost turned into like the comeback coach of the year rather than just coach of the year. It too has improved their team the most from last year to this year. And I mean, in some cases, that's a team that coached last year versus a team that coached this year, which I always think is kind of odd. But I mean, that does seem to be the way that the award goes. So that's, I guess that's probably going to be the right choice there, or that's going to be the accurate choice.
Yeah, I mean, it's in a way rewarding last year's coach of a team for being terrible as opposed to rewarding a good coach for doing a good job of coaching his team the previous season.
It rewards you for taking over for Jeff Fisher as well.
Yes. Should Jeff Fisher win Coach of the Year for making other players and coaches look so good?
I mean, I think there's a strong argument for it. I'm in favor of that. I say give it to Jeff.
Finally, Jeff Fisher gets the credit he's been denied for so long. Comeback Player of the Year. Who are you thinking?
I'm going with Keenan Allen on this one. Just because I think that he's been obviously very solid. You could potentially give it to Rob Gronkowski, but I just think that, you know, Allen is the, I don't know. I mean, Gronk gets hurt every year, it seems like. It seems like Gronk could get Comeback Player of the Year every year. And I just feel as though Allen has been a bit more impressive given what he has to work with in the Chargers offense. So that's where I'm going with that one. But this one was kind of tough for me, I thought.
Really? I feel like Allen, he's playing so well right now, you know, that he's sort of peaking at the right time for award season. Like, he, obviously the Chargers are on a hot stretch, and he's been just, if not the best receiver in football, compared to Antonio Brown, he's certainly in the top three or four over the last few weeks. So, I mean, I definitely couldn't fault anyone for taking Keenan Allen. Do you think Case Keenum should be a candidate?
Ooh, yeah, I think so. I think that Case Keenum could be a candidate. I think even, you know, Jared Goff could be a candidate. If we're talking more about, you know, Jeff Fisher coming back from playing under Jeff Fisher to now being a serviceable and good quarterback. But no, I think Case Keenum is definitely an interesting choice because he's played so well. Because this is, I guess, one thing that I will say about Case Keenum is that comeback implies that you used to be good and now you're coming back to being good. I'm not sure if that totally qualifies for Case Keenum, unless we're going like way back to 2011 at the University of Houston or something.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, he was this good in college. So his comeback is from the college Case Keenum. Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I think if Keenum had suffered an injury, perhaps we would have seen that be the case. But coming out from Jeff Fisher is perhaps a different award altogether. What about Defensive Rookie of the Year?
This one to me is Marshawn Lattimore, and that was pretty obvious. I think that he's just been so dominant for the Saints. I think there's an argument that could be made that, you know, if he's not the best cornerback in the NFL, he's definitely in the top five. So that was pretty much the obvious choice for me.
I don't know that I agree with you, and I'll tell you why.
Wow.
It's not that Marshawn Lattimore is not the best rookie. I think he's the most talented and impactful rookie on a play-by-play basis, but he's missed a lot of action. He's missed now at least three and a half games, I think, or so, with injuries. And Tre'Davious White hasn't been as good as Marshawn Lattimore, but he's been pretty good. He's been a above average starting cornerback as a rookie, and he's played a significantly higher number of snaps. He's 848 defensive snaps this year, more than any other rookie in football, to 506 for Lattimore. So we're talking about, you know, almost an extra, what, 30-35%. Of games with White, and I mean, that's has to count for something at some point. And if it were the same or a similar workload, I would take Lattimore any day of the week, and I think he's going to end up winning this award. But if it's my ballot, I think you have to consider that Lattimore's missed a bunch of time. Do you think there's any shot at TJ Watt entering into consideration, given that he had that big play against the Ravens last night? Let's say he has like a 3-sack game against the Patriots. Would that be enough to get him in the discussion?
I think it could. I think that, you know, some of these awards, there is a bit of recency bias there, and if he is able to finish this season as strong as he did play against the Ravens, then I think that there's a case to be made there. I think that Lattimore has just been, you know, when someone's been so good all season, if he starts tanking in the last couple of weeks, or if he misses even more time due to injury, then, you know, maybe give it to someone else, whether that be Tre'Davious White or TJ Watt. T.J. Watt's probably the sexier name because he's J.J. Watt's brother.
Wait, he is?
No. Yeah, you weren't aware of that?
No one tells me this stuff. They should report on this.
But no, I think that he would have to finish extremely strong to be considered there.
Yep, I agree with you there. Offensive Rookie of the Year, an award where it was going to be Kareem Hunt for sure, and then it was going to be Deshaun Watson for sure, and now it seems like it's Alvin Kamara for sure, right?
I think it is going to be Alvin Kamara. I think it should be Alvin Kamara. I will say that, you know, as far as recency bias goes, the touchdown numbers are not very similar. Alvin Kamara does have quite a few more touchdowns. But as far as total yards go, Alvin Kamara and Kareem Hunt are still pretty much equal in that regard. And obviously Kareem Hunt's impressive game on Sunday helps there. But I feel like Kareem Hunt almost got too forgotten because he did have a bad stretch there. And I think that consistency is important when you're considering these awards. But I think that Kareem Hunt somehow became underrated over the last few weeks. Well, I still do agree that it should be Alvin Kamara just because he's been more impactful as far as the entire season goes.
Yeah.
So I basically just talked myself into a circle.
I mean, but that's a valid argument. You know, I do think that if the Chiefs lost Kareem Hunt, their offense, which struggled, would be even worse than it has been. Obviously, their win yesterday was really buoyed by a big game from Hunt and their wins early in the season were when Hunt was playing his best football. And the numbers are relatively similar. Like you said, 1,435 yards from scrimmage and 7 touchdowns for Hunt, 1,247 yards from scrimmage and 11 touchdowns for Kamara. But Kamara's done that in 149 touches, whereas Hunt's had 260. So Kamara's been obviously incredibly efficient with the ball. Are we selling Leonard Fournette short? And obviously the numbers aren't going to be as efficient, but isn't he like the whole Jaguars offense at certain times over the course of the season?
Yeah, he definitely has been. I was actually just gonna bring him up as well. I feel like he's become kind of a forgotten man, and he's someone who has been pretty consistent as far as the entire season goes. So, I mean, I don't know if I put him 2 or 3 on the list. He's more on the level of Kareem Hunt right now than Alvin Kamara, just based on, like you said, the amount of yards that Kamara's put up with the amount of touches. The difference in touchdowns there. But, I mean, it's kind of tough for Fournette this year because any other year he would probably be winning Offensive Player of the Year, Offensive Rookie of the Year, or at least be a lot closer. But with all these other candidates out there, he has kind of become the forgotten guy there in Jacksonville.
Yeah, and I do think he deserves a lot of credit for what he's accomplished this year. I mean, obviously Blake Bortles, like I said, is playing better. I think this is the best stretch of his career over the last 6 or 7 weeks, but Fournette, especially early on in the season as the Jaguars were kind of getting settled on offense, just played such a huge role in closing out games for them, really helped them win when their defense was carrying them earlier on in the season. Defensive Player of the Year. This is the toughest award to me because you figure, okay, well, it's almost always a pass rusher, and the guy with the best numbers this year, well, so far it's Chandler Jones. 14 sacks and 27 knockdowns lead the league in both categories. And I find it tough to believe that unless there's a unless he's way ahead of the pack, that the voters are going to pick a guy on a Cardinals team that really isn't going anywhere. So is it going to be Chandler Jones? And if not, who do you think is the best candidate?
I don't think it will be Chandler Jones just because of that team and that defense. And it's just, I don't know. I mean, maybe I just have a bias also because I watched Chandler Jones for so long and he's a good pass rusher, but he doesn't do a lot of – he's not – quite as versatile as you want out of a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. My guy is Bobby Wagner, just based on how many injuries the Seahawks defense has had, the fact that he's still playing at a high level. I think that he's always been kind of an underrated aspect of that defense, him being in the middle there, making so many plays. And he doesn't do the flashy stuff. He doesn't really play a flashy position like some of the other guys on that defense do, like Earl Thomas or Richard Sherman or Michael Bennett. But, I mean, he's so good that he has done a good enough job keeping that Seahawks defense afloat that's who I'm giving the award to.
Interesting. The Tony Dungy approach. I will say, Bobby Wagner missed some of the game yesterday in the Seahawks loss with a hamstring injury, and there are concerns he's not going to be able to play perhaps next week. I mean, if he misses a game or two, does that preclude him from winning, you think?
It probably would. And then, I mean, then it becomes so difficult about who you're giving this award to. I don't think you're giving it to Chandler Jones, or at least I'm probably not going to. I mean, I guess who are the other pass rushers in that class? It would be Calais Campbell, obviously, had a good season. Everson Griffin had a good season. I don't know. This is a tough one. This is probably the hardest award. Who's your choice?
I don't know. That's the problem. I really have no idea. I think if you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, my choice would have been Ryan Shazier, to be honest with you. And yeah, obviously the injury impacts that. I think Bobby Wagner is a totally valid choice. But again, if he gets hurt and misses a game or two, I do think the hamstring's going to keep him from getting the award. And I think just in general, having so much talent there on defense might hurt them. And the same thing is true for Calais Campbell, where, you know, he's been great. And I think he's certainly a valid candidate, but I don't know how you give it to him without giving it to A.J. Bouye, who's tied for the league lead in interceptions, or Jalen Ramsey, who's right, maybe the best cornerback in football, or Yannick Ngakoue, who's playing like a superstar. It's hard for me to pick him versus four or five other guys on that defense. And to some extent, that's also true in Minnesota, when it comes to Everson Griffin, where there's so many talented players elsewhere on that defense that, you know, I wonder if Harrison Smith takes away from Griffin, or Xavier Rhodes takes away from Griffin. So I don't think we have an obvious candidate yet. I think I'd take Calais Campbell right now, but I think this is an award where it's going to be won by whoever has the best final three games of the year, especially if they have it, you know, in front of national voters in primetime or in, you know, at games at night. I think it's going to be a situation where whoever plays the best, whoever gets the hottest over the next 3 weeks as far as pass rushers go on successful teams is the guy who's going to win this award.
Would you consider Aaron Donald at all? Or
sure.
On the Rams?
Yeah. Sure. I would too, but I mean, I don't know that he is. I don't know why I'd pick him versus Campbell or Everson Griffin, right, or Cam Jordan. You know, he's been productive, but he hasn't been otherworldly to the point where it makes up for him missing a game early on in the season and maybe not having the hottest start to the year. So any of those guys. I mean, if Aaron Donald has four sacks against the Seahawks next week, he's the favorite to me. But it's really going to come down to the final three games of the year. So let's finish up. Offensive player of the year. Usually you kind of have to discuss this in context with the MVP award. So let's start with this. I mean, who are your... Given that Wentz is hurt and he's not going to win MVP, who are your MVP candidates right now? Who's in the discussion for you in terms of like the plausible candidates with 3 weeks to go?
I mean, Tom Brady is clearly in the mix. And sure, I guess my only two would really be Tom Brady and Antonio Brown.
Really?
I just don't think anyone else very clearly stands out. I mean, I think Carson Wentz would have certainly been been competitive with Tom Brady. I think he even might have potentially beat out Tom Brady, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, Tom Brady's another guy who he almost gets underrated like Belichick does, like when I was talking about Coach of the Year, where mm-hmm. and Tom Brady's only a two or three time MVP. I should know this off the top of my head, and I don't.
I believe two.
And that's kind of unbelievable that that's the case, that, you know, one in 2007, one in 2010. I don't think that this is like some otherworldly Tom Brady season. But sometimes Tom Brady just being Tom Brady is good enough to win the MVP. Just like back in the day, Peyton Manning being Peyton Manning was good enough to win the MVP. So, I guess I just discussed MVP a little bit more than I should have. But
no, that's fine.
Yeah, I think my candidates are Brady and Brown. Who else is in your mix there?
Yeah, so I have two other people who I think are at least viably in the discussion, one of which is Russell Wilson, who didn't have the best game against the Jags. He did throw those interceptions, but of course had a really sturdy comeback, really impressive, and without any running game, without really a very good offensive line for most of this year, I think has been very impressive. And I think the other player who's come up in the last week or two is Phillip Rivers, who, I mean, I think their defense is very solid, but he's playing the best football of his career in some ways right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like the Russell Wilson choice. I think that, you know, statistically and everything, he's had some up and down games, but he has had to completely carry that team. His offensive line has been a mess. The running game has been a mess. And he's the one who's been keeping that offense afloat and keeping that team on a winning record and everything. So I like that choice. And obviously Rivers, too, he's having an unbelievable season, you know, given where he is in his career. I'm just not sure if I can make the case for Rivers over Brady based on their two seasons. But whereas I could see you making the case for either Brown or Russell Wilson based on their circumstances over Brady.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Brady, obviously, higher completion percentage than Philip Rivers, better interception rate than Philip Rivers, averaging more yards per attempt than Philip Rivers. So across the board, I think just been a more productive quarterback than Rivers has been. What would it take to you for Antonio Brown to win league MVP?
That's a very good question. I mean, I think he does need to get, he would need to get, like 5 or 6 touchdowns over the next 3 games. I saw you wrote today that, he might have to crack that 2,000 yard barrier. Mm-hmm. I guess that certainly, that would probably do it for him as well. That would be extremely difficult for him to do that at this point. He'd need almost 500 yards in the last 3 games. I don't know. I mean, I don't like the fact that the MVP is just annually given to the best quarterback in the NFL. I think that there should be some defensive players in the mix. I think there should be some skill position players in the mix. I mean, hey, even throw an offensive lineman in the mix if there's not an obvious quarterback. Mm-hmm. But obviously, at the same time, quarterback is the most important player on the field, on either side of the ball. So I can't completely fault it for just being a quarterback's award. But, yeah, Brown would have to have probably a completely otherworldly last 3 games of the season for him to beat out Brady for MVP at this point for me.
Well, that's the question, right? I mean, is it a question of how well did you perform or how essential you are to your team? I mean, if you said right now, okay, are the Patriots going to suffer more if they lose Tom Brady as opposed to the Steelers, and how much they would suffer without losing Antonio Brown, I think you'd have to pick Brady, right?
Right. Although, I mean, I do think the Steelers wouldn't be anywhere near the same offense if sure. Antonio Brown wasn't in there. I mean, clearly the drop-off from Tom Brady to Brian Hoyer is a lot different than the drop-off from Antonio Brown to Martavis Bryant or Juju Smith-Schuster or even, Eli Rogers. Those are all at least decent mm-hmm. wide receivers. But at the same time, I mean, can you account for who the backup is on each team when you're deciding an award? Because obviously, if you're talking about Tom Brady to Jimmy Garoppolo, then the drop-off there would be much less substantial. So I don't know. It's a really tough award for me to gauge. I think overall it should just come down to who had the best season, because that's far less complicated than mm-hmm. who was the most valuable player to his specific team. Mm-hmm. And that's just so hard to gauge. It takes in so many other variables. So I prefer to just look at this award as who had the best season.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I do think that any of those guys would be a fair pick. I don't think I'd take Antonio Brown unless he does hit 2,000 yards. I think it'll take that sort of monumental season. And I think having 2 big back-to-back games against the Ravens and a Sunday night game, and then against the Patriots in a obviously what could be an AFC deciding regular season game would be a big boon to his chances. But at the same time, we're recording this Monday afternoon. Tom Brady's going to be on national television playing against the Dolphins, who are not very good against the pass tonight. Mm-hmm. You figure he's lined for a big game. Next week he's going to be playing the Steelers in a very important game. If he has 2 great games in a row, I think you're really going to see that Tom Brady MVP train pick up. So is Brady your pick for MVP?
Brady is my pick. I will say about Tom Brady, we'll be playing without Rob Gronkowski tonight, so we'll see how he's able to do in that game. That's he put up decent stats against the Buccaneers earlier this season without Gronk, but wasn't really the offense's best performance. And his statistics also have dropped off a little bit since he's been dealing with this Achilles injury. The last 2 games, I mean, last week he didn't throw a touchdown. Just overall, I mean, he still has a fantastic, if you want to go with passer rating, then go with passer rating. But, I mean, mm-hmm. he still has a fantastic passer rating in these last 2 weeks. But it was significantly higher and more MVP-worthy before dealing with this Achilles injury. So we'll see if he is able to kind of ramp things back up and pick things back up mm-hmm. over the last 3 weeks of the season. But, given the fact that he's not going to be with Rob Gronkowski this week, given the fact that Achilles was still bothering him, with the fact that he didn't practice on Wednesday, didn't practice on Thursday, I wouldn't be that surprised if we weren't seeing the best version of Tom Brady over these last 3 weeks of the season. And if he does, I don't think Tom Brady's going to struggle, mm-hmm. but if he does look a little bit more pedestrian, then perhaps that could change the tone of the MVP argument as well.
So let me ask you, would you pick if I gave you two choices between taking Tom Brady as MVP or taking the field to an MVP, which would you pick?
I would. That's really tough. I would still pick Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I wonder how voters are going to decide this, because I think that the smart pick based on stats and based on circumstances and situation would be Tom Brady. But I mean, the guy's only won a couple of MVPs in his career. So writers do seem a little bit hesitant to give it to him. Mm-hmm. If he's not the runaway candidate, I still would take Tom Brady, but that's a really good question.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I would go 60-40 Brady at this point. I do think losing Carson Wentz, it really eliminated his most viable component. Obviously, yeah. Russell Wilson didn't have his best game last week. So, again, I feel like a lot of the people who were in the way are now getting out of the way. And so Brady's in great shape to come away with his third MVP award. So I agree with you. I think Brady is my pick for MVP. And now who would you then choose as your offensive player of the year? Would it be Brady, or would you pick perhaps somebody else?
See, I think it's kind of stupid.
Yes, I agree.
The offensive MVP doesn't just win offensive player of the year every year. It's fun and everything to give credit to someone else, but it is silly. So I'm going to say Brady. It would be nice to give credit to Antonio Brown. I don't think you can give it to another quarterback at that point. I don't think there's any running backs worthy, but I don't know. I'm going to give it to Brady just because I think it's silly otherwise. I will say that it's not to cut you off before you give your choice or anything, but I do think it's kind of funny that throughout the years, running backs have got MVP so often. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's not going to be the case this year, but it's just a really interesting award that's just always given out to pretty much a quarterback or a running back. And at this point in, our football viewing landscape and everything, I don't think that we value running backs nearly as highly as they used to be when they won MVP awards so often in the past. I just find that interesting, I guess.
It is, yeah. I mean, obviously the league has changed, and it does seem like award balloting has accounted for that. I think it takes just such an impactful season at this point to an MVP as a running back, where you're thinking about Adrian Peterson, who made it to the playoffs with Christian Ponder as his quarterback, and really, ran for 2,000 yards, carried that Vikings team on his back, and took that to an MVP. Or you think like a little further, where it was Sean Alexander and Danian Tomlinson, where they had to score 25-plus touchdowns. I don't know that a guy, if he scored 25 touchdowns, would win right now, but I do think that it takes just an astronomical effort from a running back to really compete with quarterbacks. And maybe that's fair. I mean, we look at the league and quarterbacks are getting paid 6-7 times as much as even, good running backs are in the NFL right now. Maybe not that much, maybe 3 or 4 times, but still significantly higher than running backs. So maybe we're just seeing the voters sort of value running backs the same way that the league values running backs. And maybe that's too much or too little, but that's another conversation for another day. Doug, where can people check out more of your work?
You can go to NESN.com. to follow all of our Patriots coverage, or follow me on Twitter at Doug Kide. That's where you'll see all of my informational and extremely stupid tweets.
God knows you're the only person who puts out stupid tweets, so no.
Oh, 100%.
Doug Kide on Twitter. Of course, Doug, thank you so much for hopping on the show today.
Absolutely. Anytime, Bill. It was a pleasure and a joy.
All right, guys, thanks so much for listening to today's episode of The Bill Barnwell Show. Of course, more audio coming later on this week. You can listen to The Nickel Package on Wednesday. I'll be hosting then, and also another episode of this very show coming to you later on this week. So thanks so much for listening, and more Bill Barnwell Show on the way.